Welcome to Switzerland in Sound, produced and presented by Bob Zanotti.
Welcome to Switzerland in Sound. This is Bob Zanotti. It's time for another Letter from Switzerland, in which we try to reflect Swiss life through our own eyes. Today's letter is written and presented by my American-Canadian friend, Aubrey Diem, from his home in the mountains of Canton Valley in southern Switzerland.
In September, I celebrated my 81st birthday. I've had some eye trouble, so as a present to myself, I decided to stop driving at the advice of my doctor. My car was in excellent condition, and I knew every curve in the road from Zinal at 1,600 meters to Sierre at 600 meters, down in the valley. But I realized that if you go off the road at certain places, the drop was 300 meters straight down. Certain death. Interestingly, despite the improvements made to the road since I first began to drive on it many years ago, the danger today is even greater than before. There are now far more tourist cars and cumbersome tourist buses, as well as long trucks on the road. Years ago, as a young student in Detroit, I worked as a taxi driver, and I also drove across North America from the Atlantic to the Pacific Oceans, not to mention traveling by road all over Europe. I always felt good behind the wheel. But now, the doctor advised me to stop driving. My vision and reflexes were no longer like those of a 25-year-old man. As the Canadian songwriter Leonard Cohen put it in one of his famous songs, "I hurt where I used to play." I then summed up the situation and realized it was really not as bad as I had anticipated. I would save lots of money, considering no more road taxes, gasoline insurance, and no more changing tires. In some other parts of the world, stopping driving is almost like a death sentence. But for those of us seniors living in Switzerland, giving up the car opens up a whole new experience, thanks to the country's unparalleled public transportation network. I now take the bus and trains to wherever I want to go, and that means virtually everywhere in this country. Best of all, the post bus connects Zinal to Sierre several times a day, and the train and postal bus schedules are synchronized, so you don't have to wait more than a few minutes for an onward connection. On top of that, public transport is far faster and more reliable than traveling by car. I really have no regrets. Now, if only the police could catch all the drivers who drink and drive on the Zinal-Sierre Road, driving in the Val d'Anniviers would be even safer. But alas, this is Canton Valley, where the grape is a deeply rooted part of the culture.
You can now hear programs from PCJ Radio while on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher is a free news and talk mobile app available for your smartphone. Downloading is quick and easy. Just find Stitcher in the App Store. It's free and just takes a few seconds. Then during registration, hit the promo code box and enter PCJ to get automatically entered to win $100. For more information, go to www.pcjmedia.com and click on the Stitcher logo on the right menu. PCJ Radio on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio.
The name is Rudolf Stüssi. He was born in Zurich, Switzerland, but he lives now in Canada. His, shall we say, adopted home, at least 50% of the time. But he does make it back to Switzerland on a regular basis. Rudolf Stüssi is an artist. He is a writer. He's a journalist. He's been involved in the commercial side of the film business. He was directly concerned with the production of Asterix. This man has been in many parts of the world. He has done many things, and in the next few minutes, we'd like to try to find out a little bit more about this man, Rudolf Stüssi. You will not recognize any accent in there because, Rudolf, as we'll all hear, you're speaking absolutely native, good, clean Canadian English, right?
Thank you, yes.
And
that's
there's
right.
There's a reason for that. You're were born in 1947, but I think in 1951, I presume your family went to the United States, and that was your first contact with North America. Tell us about it.
Well, at first, I couldn't speak. I didn't know any English. I remember not being able to communicate with my fellow students at school. It was a very interesting experience.
I can imagine.
Perhaps that started a little bit that that outsider feeling that I think most artists have.
Yeah, we'll talk about that a little bit later. What was the reason for you going over there? I mean, I presume, as I say, your family went over. Is that right?
Yes, well, actually, my mother divorced my father and remarried, and my stepfather got a job in Kansas.
Wow. Middle America.
Yes, quite a switch from the mountains to Kansas. Yeah,
yeah, one doesn't associate art with Kansas too much. It's a pretty quiet place, right?
Well, it's true. It's a very dramatic place in some ways, but it's very flat.
Very flat. Sort of monotonous, too, right?
Well, I don't remember the monotony so much, but I was a kid, you know. They sort of make do with what they have.
When did you go to Canada, and what brought you up there?
I didn't go to Canada until I was going to university. Mm-hmm. And I went there because I had relatives there, and I wanted to go to university. I also actually fell in love with my second cousin, who lived there, and wanted to see her country, mm-hmm. visit with her. And yes, that lasted a few years, and I liked Canada, actually, finally better than the United States. So I stayed.
What do you find is the difference? There is a difference, we know, those of us who know both sides of the border, but how would you describe it?
Well, I think the Canadians are more reserved. They are less prone, I think, to violence. I think that's partly historical, it's partly legal, because of the gun laws. They also don't see themselves really as being the best country in the world, which I find healthy.
Yes.
And they're more open to other cultures.
Mm-hmm. Maybe the heavy Europeanization in the last years, still a heavy immigration from old Europe, I think, has put a European stamp on Canadian society. Would you agree?
Oh, yes, that's certainly true. It's always been that way. And they, of course, were a colony much longer, too, than the United States was. So that European connection has never really been broken, I think.
I know that there has been almost a kind of affinity for many years between Switzerland and Canada. I've heard it said many times that for some reason, which we could speculate about, Swiss seem to like Canada. They seem to identify closer and more directly with Canada than with the U.S. Do you think that's part of the reason, or do you see another factor?
I think in Europe in general, Canada is seen as, wow, the great open spaces place. And that's something that attracts Europeans, particularly, especially in Switzerland, where every square kilometer has some kind of settlement or whatever.
Yes.
And in Canada, that's not the case. I think it's that great attraction. Yeah.
So for Swiss and maybe Europeans in general, the best mixture, the best sort of mélange of North America and Europe.
Yes,
you
maybe.
You feel comfortable there.
And I see some other similarities, too, between Swiss and Canadian cultures, specifically, yeah.
Also, the politics, being a multicultural and certainly multilingual country, I think that's an affinity right there.
Yes, I think that's right.
Yeah. You studied art in Canada at Carleton University, I believe.
No, that's where I studied that's where I studied English literature and journalism, but I went to the Ontario College of Art in Toronto.
What drove you to art? I mean, obviously, at a very early stage, you must have felt the artist in there somewhere enough to follow it.
Oh, yes, all my life, really. But I think every child actually is an artist in a way. And many of them discouraged or they lose interest.
Yeah, I've heard
I never lost interest.
We kill the artist in the child, basically. The society
yes,
does it.
Yes, I think
it.
That's to some extent true, yeah, and it's very sad.
Yeah.
I try to encourage it when I teach, but yes. And then my mother was an illustrator. She went to art school as well when she was young and encouraged me.
So you got encouragement.
Yeah. Oh, yes, definitely. Yeah.
That's a big factor, encouragement. You know, to be encouraged or discouraged, it can change your whole life. One thing I notice, having had an opportunity to look at your work, we've been looking over the book, the retrospective. It's entitled Rudolf Stössi, and it's a beautiful book published by Bentley here in Bern, which is, of course, the outstanding artistic publishing house. And one thing that strikes me is how well-rounded, and I'm not trying to play the art critic here. That's my disclaimer from the very beginning. I'm trying to be very open about it and very subjective, and I'm not a great art specialist, but to me, you are a very well-rounded artist in the sense that you express yourself in so many different ways. Your work, we see examples of the classic portrait mm-hmm. where they're so well done in detail and precision and care that you actually literally have to look closely to make sure it's not a photograph. And on the other hand, you have these catastrophic depictions of buildings in Berlin where you spent several years. How would you describe your own work and the motivation behind it?
Well, to me, the earlier work tends to be the more realistic. I felt I had to go through sort of that stage to learn my my medium. And now, it's not an end in itself. It's a means to another end, which now turns towards the distorted. I feel somehow that life is distorted. Life is not what it seems. You have to look behind the facade. Everything crumbles away and gets rebuilt time and time again. And I think that's part of what I try to paint.
Sounds a bit depressing. Are you depressed?
No, it's fascinating. It's not depressing, but it's not. It's like when you take photographs and everybody has a smile. My pictures don't always smile.
Mm. What I feel, though, is that I think it's important if we could dwell on this for a moment. I'm trying to describe what I feel when I look at it. You're not iconoclastic. You're not gloating about this change and destruction. You're simply commenting on it. You're putting it down so people can see it and feel the dynamics involved in the change. It's not really a political comment so much as it is an observation. Am I right there?
Well, it has political aspects to it, too. But yes, I mean, I feel this. I'm in it. I'm part of it. And so that's what I'm trying to express. Also, my turmoil in the middle of this.
Unfortunately, we don't have television. And one of the great challenges for a broadcast journalist, a radio journalist, is to describe pictures in something very visual. But I have a few very interesting examples here. If we talk about very precise portraits, mm-hmm. the classic portraits, I think mm-hmm. most people can see that. Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen them in galleries. And mm-hmm. we marvel at how people could do this with such precision. For me,
it's a great exercise.
It takes a lot of discipline, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yes, it does. You constantly have to keep observing, and mm-hmm. I think that's very useful. Also, for the things that I do, I sometimes work completely out of my head, or work from memory, or work from dreams. All these things can be the sources of painting.
I feel a bit of humor in what you do, at least some of it. You're very humorous with the use of color.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost a cartoon style, a little bit. It's certainly, you might say, surrealistic, too. I mean, you're having fun with colors.
Well, certainly, yes. And I also perspective. I love to play mm-hmm. around with perspective. And that's
you're
something
not kidding.
That's, and that makes it fun for me.
Uh-huh.
And it's something that also got me then involved in cartoons.
There's also a bit of social commentary and critique
That's right.
here too. Here's a very good example of some of this. Let's look at your Berlin work. Mm. Some of it. I have several cards here, which are actually postcard size. And here's one called Friedenauer Gothic. And this is a building, actually a series of buildings on an urban setting in the center of Berlin somewhere. And here we have this shape, this sort of disastrous, dilapidated look where everything is sort of crooked. The windows are crooked. The lines are going in illogical or unexpected directions. Mm-hmm. You want them to go straight and they go up mm-hmm. or they go down, or the windows are crooked, or the front steps are sort of leaning over. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a scene of disaster here, but in a way, the colors that you use, these bright, almost happy colors, these optimistic colors, sort of give it the feeling it's not so much, you're not down on it.
No.
You're just trying to depict visually what's going on.
In a way, that's almost a hopeful picture, I think.
Yeah, it's bright.
But I mean, Berlin, you know, Berlin in itself has such a checkerboard history, and it's a perfect symbol for everything that's happened in the 20th century, I think. And so I love working in Berlin because it constantly inspires me that way.
We were talking about the turmoil of Berlin, and I've heard it said often, maybe it's almost a cliche, that Switzerland is not the ideal place for an artist because there isn't too much going on here. It's a quiet, everything works well, not too much turmoil, too few problems. But you still keep coming back. How do you feel about that?
Well, I keep coming back and I keep going away. I think that's part of it too. I don't think I could live here all my life or the whole time. And that's why I keep going back to North America. I sort of need that freedom sometimes too. I come back, yes, and Switzerland has produced, I think, many great artists. Oddly enough, especially perhaps from where I live now, which is Graubünden.
Yeah, Lenzer Heide outside Chur.
Yeah. And there are people like Segantini and Karijet and Giger, whom I visited
Giger.
Just a few weeks ago in his home in Zurich. And
Alien,
great.
People know him from these weird creations. In
sure,
Alien,
and I mean, here too in Switzerland, for some reason, he's not considered a great artist, but I think of him as a great artist. I think the rest of the world, to some extent, considers him a great artist.
Frankly,
but
a lot
they don't
people
take
here,
him seriously.
Yeah, they call him a nut here.
Yes, exactly. There you are, you know. I think in Switzerland, in some ways, it's easier to be an outsider than almost anywhere else because, generally speaking, the attitude is very bourgeois. Mm.
You love the mountains, though. You love the nature.
I love the mountains.
You find inspiration there.
Yes.
And you've done a lot of also mountain scenes and also Graubünden in general. You've done some houses and buildings and things like that and just everyday scenes.
Yes, that's right.
Where is your heart, Rudolf Stussy? I mean, you have this commuting practically back and forth when you feel, the moment has arrived, I leave Toronto, go to Graubünden, and then one time the moment comes, now it's time to go back to Toronto. It almost sounds a bit schizophrenic.
Well, I feel homesick for a lot of places, you know. It's not just that. I feel homesick for Kansas, you know. I feel homesick for Manila. I feel homesick for Dominican Republic. For
Latin
Berlin,
America, Mexico, Africa,
Florence, London.
Studied art in Florence as well. I mean, you've been everywhere.
That's right.
You speak five languages. So,
I mean, sometimes I think, yes, I'm mid-Atlantic. You know, I keep crossing back and forth. My heart's in the middle somewhere.
Right.
And there are things that I've taken from each culture that are part of me and that I wouldn't be without.
Mm. Maybe we could put it this way. You have two sets of batteries.
Yes, that's right.
You have the Canadian or the North American
Toronto
battery.
And Lenzer Heide.
You have the Lenzer
Heide.
Those are the two
poles.
Right. And then you come back or you stay long enough in one place for the one battery to get filled up. And then when that's charged up, you go and charge up the other one. Rudolf Stussy, thanks so much for coming by.
Thank you, Bob.
The term bed and breakfast will not be strange to anyone in the English-speaking world because the B&B phenomenon originally came from England, if I'm well informed, and it spread all over the world in English-speaking countries. But the bed and breakfast concept in Switzerland is relatively new, and we are talking to somebody today near the northern Swiss city of Basel, the northwestern Swiss city of Basel on the Rhine River, who knows a lot about this. It's Dorette Provost, who runs her own B&B agency called Bed and Breakfast Agency Basel, but she's also affiliated with a grouping called Bed and Breakfast Switzerland. And this is the national organization of people who are in this particular business. There's one thing we have to point out. Historically, Switzerland or Switzerland's hotels have always provided breakfast. It's included in the hotel room. But there must be other advantages. How do the advantages stack up in Switzerland as compared to the conventional hotel?
There are two advantages. One is, of course, the price, because the price in hotels is very high in Switzerland.
Especially in big city areas.
Yes, sometimes it's also a good quality you get for a good price, but some of the people do not have so much money. And
they're not all on expense accounts.
That's true. And so they need to stay in a cheaper place. And the other advantage is that you stay in a guest family, usually in a Swiss guest family, and so you can see how Swiss people live. Usually B&B is to stay in a family, sharing the bathroom, sometimes sharing the kitchen.
Of course, there's no obligation to get too close to a family. If you prefer to keep a certain amount of personal distance, that's up to you. A good host will certainly realize that and respect one's wishes. It's just a different atmosphere from a hotel, and as you say, cheaper as well. But when we use the word cheap, we're not talking about poor quality. Switzerland has a long tradition for fine hotels, and also the situation at home. People keep their homes clean, and they keep them well ordered. But still, to ensure this, you must have a standard that you try to adhere to.
We have quality controls. That means that we started giving stars to our guest families, and it's not the same as in a hotel where you can have up to 5 stars. Bed and breakfast places have only up to 4 stars. For having 4 stars, you need to have a luxury place. It must be a really nice place.
Even the location has to be particularly
nice. Yes, and you need to have a private bathroom, a luxury bathroom. Mm-hmm. And for 1 star, that's a very simple place. So
almost like a hostel type of thing.
Maybe like kind of hostel. But most of our places are 3 stars.
So let's say 3 stars would be, it'd be like living in your own home, back home, more or less.
It's more or less like being private, yes.
I'm curious about breakfast. For some people who consider it their most important meal of the day, it would be nice to know what breakfast means in Switzerland. Yes. Is it the so-called continental breakfast with a croissant and coffee or tea, or is it more substantial?
No, but what we ask for is a Swiss breakfast, so that means bread and butter and marmalade. But if you want to have 3 stars, you need to serve a rich breakfast. So if you stay once in a place with 3 stars and they do not serve you a rich breakfast, then you have to call me.
Okay. Can you be a little bit more precise about the difference in price between a really nice, comfortable, let's say 3-star B&B establishment and a comparable hotel?
It depends where you stay. If you stay up in the mountains in September or July, when there is a high season, you certainly pay much more than if you would stay in a not-so-touristic place in Switzerland. So you have to look on our website. I think it starts at around 30 Swiss francs a night with breakfast, but it goes up to maybe 100. It depends where you are and how luxury the place is.
Just like hotels.
Bed and breakfast is not always cheap, but it's always nice and it's personal.
What about the length of stay? I mean, is there a minimum requirement of 2, 3, 4 days, or can you go to a B&B on a daily basis?
With my bed and breakfast agency in Basel, there is a minimum stay of 2 nights. But all the other places, there you can stay also 1 night.
Are reservations always necessary?
It's recommended because many places, especially the nice places, are booked very fast. So it's better to make reservation in advance.
Dora Provost, thank you very much for telling us about the joys, the advantages, and the fun of staying in Swiss bed and breakfast establishments instead of the classic hotel. For Switzerland in Sound, from Basel, this is Bob Zanotti.
If you want more information about Switzerland in Sound, check them out online at www.switzerlandinsound.com.